All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to paint their door a vibrant shade of blue. Others have the need to decorate their bathroom with fish, anchors, and other nautical items. And because each homeowner has unique needs, GEICO helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with GEICO.
Just call me an overnight delivery because I am in my prime.
Be thankful I read so many books because I don't have time to read you too.
Okay. All right. It's not fair that you didn't have a tagline and then you came up with that in 3 seconds.
Well, we were talking about books in your living room. And I was like, you know what? I have been reading a lot of books. So, yeah.
You were telling me the incredible books you've read. Yeah. And I said, amazing. That was
That was the extent of the conversation about the books. That is true.
I was a book person. I identify as a book person. I just haven't really sat down because I've just done so many, like, long form essays. Like, I'm a New Yorker girly. Yeah. I'm like a New York Magazine feature girly. Mm-hmm. So, but I've ventured into magazine life for the last several years, but I need to go back to books.
For me, like, books never go out of style, even when I'm like reading, because I have two magazine subscriptions too. Like, I get Vogue and I get The Atlantic. So I do read magazines.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think there is something about one person doing a very deep dive about something. And I usually switch up my book. So I'll do like a fiction 1 week, like just something fluffy, clear my head. And then I'll do a nonfiction. So I go back and forth, back and forth. And so I'll do like something silly and it's fun. And then I'll do like, all right, no, I'm going to learn something or whatever.
You know what? I never do The Atlantic. I do occasionally Rolling Stone. And every time I read a Rolling Stone, I'm like, I should read Rolling Stone more often. They have great stuff.
They are not the Rolling Stone that, you know, I grew up with that was just like music-y type stuff. Like,
no,
they, I think they started making the switch maybe in like 2005, 2006, like that era, they really started getting to like journalism. Mm-hmm. I was like, okay. So yeah, Rolling Stone is consistently pretty good.
Yeah.
I agree.
Support journalism after signing up for the Andy's Girls Patreon. That's the order of events. You guys, it's Andy's Girls. It's episode 6. Blah, 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 and I'm so excited to have a return guest. You know him as the writer behind overpricedvodka.com, who is also a prolific Bravoholic. Welcome back to the Clawfist, Ravi D'Angelo. It is Friday morning at 6:15 a.m. Pacific time.
Okay.
And we are here. It's also 10:37, but it's so early.
It's not so early.
It's 4 a.m. I can't believe I woke up. Okay.
I gave you options of after work times this week. I was like, do you want 5 p.m. or do you want this 10 a.m.?
Okay.
And you said 10 a.m.
Well,
oh, sorry,
I had some family things in out of state that I had to handle. That was so fun.
Right.
So delightful. But so I went for the Friday morning. And I have to tell you, so excited chipper as can be, spent last night talking about New York for 18 hours. And I'm so excited because I know, I'm sure we'll have some thoughts, but also Salt Lake City and Beverly Hills.
Yep, exactly. I mean, I think that this was a good Bravo week. You know, some people disagree, like a lot of people.
Do they?
Yes. Well, I was, sometimes I catch the tweets and, you know, people, you know, talking about stuff. And I think people just like to complain.
Oh, I love it. Are you kidding? It's my love
language.
Like
to complain. Like for me, I'm like, that was so fun. And other people are like angry. I'm like, why are we mad? This was entertainment. This was entertaining.
I mean, the thing with, I wish I could do an audio commentary of the Salt Lake City reunion. I need to figure out a way to do that because every single moment, I'm just like laughing, crying. Very emotional, laughing, confused. Why is Meredith giving that face? laughing. Bronwyn, what's happening? Why isn't Todd aware of everything that you're telling us months prior? Because I believe him when he's like very obviously shocked when stuff is told him and he's asked for his reaction. He didn't know that it originally occurred in his life.
Well,
like,
because
there's
one,
a lot.
He definitely does not watch the show.
I mean, LOL.
He barely knows what the show is.
He doesn't at all, but he definitely has some grievances.
Yes, because he does not want to be on it in any way whatsoever. And, you know, I'm still a little bit torn on Bronwyn's motives, because at the beginning of the season, I was like, oh, she came on to get divorced. But now, you know, like one of those wives was like, you know, there are cracks in my marriage. Mm. So let me go
and
on
I
this
love
show.
That journey. Yeah. I love that path.
And I was like, oh, easy, she's one of those. Like, she's coming on the show to get divorced. It was like, let me get my name out there, get a career for myself. And then, you know, that this will be the platform that exposes the cracks in my marriage. And then I will have like a nice escape route with good public favor and a new career and blah, blah, blah. So that's what I thought. But the, you know, the way she has decided to shield him ultimately and backtrack on some of the things she said, like with the affair and stuff like that. I'm just like, did y'all have a conversation where you did tell him that we had this conversation and he's like, it's on camera? No, we got to walk that back. Like, is that the dynamic where he does actually know some of the stuff that she was saying? And so then she has to walk it back at the reunion. Like, did she tell him about the conversation on the boat? And so he's like, we're not putting it out there that I had an affair. So at the reunion, she decides to walk it back a little bit. It was like, well, from my point of view, you had conversations that went too far from this woman. So like walking back that you had an emotional affair, like she was so adamant about on the boat, to now, okay, you had some conversations that I believe shouldn't have gone so far.
Did she shield him, or is she trying to defend her behavior by sort of rewriting history?
I don't know. That's the thing, because I feel like if you like Bronwyn, then she's shielding him. If you do not like Bronwyn, then she's a liar. So that's usually what I find with the conversation. Like, people who really like Bronwyn are still defending her and be like, oh, yeah, so she's in this marriage where he has the power dynamic. So they had the conversations and now she has to walk back stuff. But then others are like, no, she's a liar. And now that she's been caught, she wants to rewrite history because some of the stories are now not playing the way that she hoped they would. So
I don't know if it's irony or just a plain old contradiction, but there's something truly incredible about the way she dragged Lisa to absolute hell. And maybe we'll get into it, because I was like, all right, I'm sort of here for this exchange, but dragged Lisa to absolute hell for revealing things on camera that she chose to reveal on camera, and then Lisa repeated them. But then when it comes to Todd, he seems genuinely confused, not just about what she revealed on camera, but about things happening in his life that I don't think he was aware of. Like Gwen finding the text messages.
Right. It was like, when was she over my shoulder reading my phone?
I don't think he knew that. I'm not like defending his behavior to begin with, which was apparently, spoiler alert, not an emotional affair. News to me, maybe not Heather. But the way that he reacted to that, like, you could see the pain and shock in his eyes. I'm not a Todd truther, but there was something genuinely perplexing, in my mind at least, a truly magical world in which to exist and hopefully thrive, because I don't think he knew that. So her revealing it to us and maybe being in denial or whatever and not telling him in the last many months or the morning before the reunion or during their lunch break, that like, hey, by the way,
I also said this,
but also this happened. I don't even think it's about stuff. I don't think it's just her saying stuff on camera. I think like he never knew that.
Well, I don't know about that. I think that I think that he did know. But what
I think he knew that he had done something with text messages that was crossing boundaries, but I don't think he knew that Gwen.
I don't think it was brand new information, but whether it was brand new information or not, his reaction to me makes him look a lot better than he really has all season, because whether he knew or did not know, we can agree that he didn't know it was on TV, right?
Agree.
So we can agree that, and the first time he's hearing about this is at the reunion. And so that's the first time he realizes that this is on TV. And so he had the option in that moment to either like disagree with her or ask her why. Like, he had the opportunity to have a bigger reaction than he did. Mm-hmm. And he didn't. So she wouldn't look bad. That's what the wheels looked like to me.
You think he was performing to help her?
Yes. I think
you think he's that smart?
Yes, I think he's really smart.
I think he's smart in life, but not on this show.
I think that he has caught up quickly because I thought his performance at the reunion shows somebody who is like, oh, I am on a TV show. So let me behave as if I'm on a TV show a little more than I have, because I thought the man who showed up at the reunion was not the same man who was like cutting her off at the knees all season. That felt like a different man to me. This felt like a man who maybe isn't watching the show, but understands the reactions to him because he mentioned that he knows what people are saying about him online.
But I don't think he's watching the show.
No, he's not watching the show. I don't think he's watching the show, but he knows what people are saying about him online because he said that.
I don't think he has the capacity to change. I don't think he can. I think Bronwyn can do that. I think other cast members can potentially do that. I don't think Lisa can do it, which is one of her better qualities. Like, I think Lisa's going to Lisa because she can only Lisa and doesn't want to do anything but Lisa. With this, his behavior, the lens of whatever on Bronwyn and Todd, it was better for him to see his behavior and responses during the reunion. And I think he really appreciated that moment when Andy was like, you know, the way you have been protecting Gwen, I want to like thank you or whatever. I really appreciate it, whatever the fuck he said. And you could see it landed for Todd. It was meaningful. Like, I understood him better after the reunion, but I understand their relationship less.
I think that we only saw 15 minutes of this man throughout the whole season.
And it was the worst 15 minutes of his life.
And so there's a lot of interpretation one way or the other. But I think that, you know, if he decides to film again another season, we won't see the Todd that we saw the first season. I think we will see a Todd that is like a little more Bravo husband.
I don't think he can do that.
Let's make a bet. And let's see what happens.
I bet you a book. Okay, before they all get burned, yeah. I'm gonna bet you a book.
Yep, that sounds good. Yeah, you wanted to identify as a book reader. I'm like, I don't think you can identify as anything anymore.
Oh no. Well, while we still have words to use, I just kind of feel like,
wait, but did you like the reunion?
Oh my god, I fucking love the reunion.
I love half the reunion. I love the left half of the reunion.
Like the left couch?
Yes, because that right couch, those three idiots together, it's like, oh my gosh. Like anytime anybody on the left couch speaks, the three of them chime in every single time. Like Heather is just so excited to be on the Mean Girls couch with Lisa and Meredith. Like it's just like makes me want to throw up. Like whenever the three of them start cackling at the same time, I'm just like, it is like, Destiny's idiots on this couch, and all three of them want to be Beyonce, and they are all Latavia, and it is ridiculous. I cannot stand it. But the left couch, fabulous. Love it. And I'm glad they're sticking Britney on the idiot couch too. Like that's, yes, put Britney on the idiot couch down the end from them. I cannot stand them together. Break them up.
I cannot believe that Brittany had access to Angie's dress and that they showed up in the exact same dress and that her fallback was that like bedazzled sequin nightmare because...
Wait, Angie and Brittany had the same dress?
That's what they said.
I thought Angie and Bronwyn had the same dress.
No, there's only one.
And then Bronwyn changed.
As Bronwyn made clear to us, there is only one Met Gala ball gown that Karlie Kloss wore and Bronwyn paid for it. So...
That's what she's wearing on the reunion?
What Bronwyn is wearing?
Yeah.
Yeah, and honestly, poor Whitney, because those sleeves are blocking out her fucking face.
That's fine. She's not doing anything anyway.
Yeah, that is actually. It's like some of her best work is like trying to nudge her shoulder against the sleeve.
It's like she's like Marlo peeking around the corner. It's just like...
Rough stuff. I hear you. Here's the
difference. Are you about to support this couch?
The difficulty for me, I'm going through a struggle, okay? Because I'm like, don't feel how you're feeling. Change how you're feeling. But I can't do it because it's not honest and I just am too lazy to try to pretend. The thing for me is I'm like, I've been on the outs with Heather for so long and I'm not like right back in. I'm not like a Heather stan. I'll never be that again. I was so strongly her first season and then we broke the fuck up. And I still, this is me trying not to say what I'm about to say. I still think she went way too strong and was like way too rough in how she was describing Bronwyn during the season. I think she like it was just too much. There was anger there. Obviously, the prenup thing, she was completely wrong. I don't even think we talked about that during the reunion, did we?
Oh, yeah, it hasn't. No, didn't even.
That's a big, maybe that'll be part three of what I assume will be an 8-part reunion and they better never finish. But I kind of feel like, now I just thought of a Seth Marks joke that I'm not going to make. But I just kind of feel like she was so wrong in so much of her like behavior and anger toward Bronwyn. But I don't think she was entirely off in characterizing Bronwyn. And that to me is really difficult because I thought I would be really consistent through the season of being like, I think Heather's doing too much. And now I still believe that she was doing too much. But I'm like, you know what? She picked up something that I didn't want to believe was true. But the way that Bronwyn is like rewriting the history of what she said and trying to make it land and seem normal and okay, I'm playing in my head like, Bronwyn, are you doing this because you don't want to make Todd upset? Or did you really say things in a way that you knew would land and create a moment or get support and know after the fact that they were incorrect? Like, Bronwyn is flat out saying stuff in a way that feels inflammatory, maybe to get people's attention, but I don't think that that they're true. Like, she's saying things and then bringing it back so deeply, countering herself in a way that makes me feel like she's not real.
Well, I have a different read on Bronwyn in general. So I still dislike Heather. So, like, well, I was going to dislike Heather anyway in general. But for Bronwyn, I do see, like, you know, a deeply insecure, hurt person. And I think when, you know, things happen to her or around her, like the emotional affair that, you know, isn't really an emotional affair, I think she believes that it's like, to her, that's what it feels like. Right. And I think she's smart enough to understand that, you know, no, this is not as big as my feelings are making it. But I think in an emotional moment, she doesn't have that cap anymore. So I think if she is like just alone with her thoughts and the emotional affair, it's not as big of a deal. When she's around these women where she's put in this place where she is back to feeling insecure and feeling unheard and feeling like no one likes her and feeling like, you know, she's not enough, then situations like that that have made her feel that way come out the way they did when they made her feel that way. So I don't think that she, I don't think Bronwyn is a liar. Like, a lot of people want to say, like, she's lying. I was like, I don't think she's a liar. I think that, one, memory is always imperfect. Everybody remembers things incorrectly. And I think she remembers them, remembers situations to put herself as more of a victim than she actually was. And so I don't necessarily think it is an intentionally manipulative thing where it's like trying to make a situation more inflammatory to garner favor. I think she is speaking of a situation that hurt her. And she's speaking about it from a place of hurt. And then when she calms down, it's like, I really shouldn't have said it like that. Like, I feel like she has had that moment afterwards. It was like, you know what? I was really emotional and I told this in a way that made it seem like it was bigger than it is. I think she understands that, which is pretty much what she said on the reunion. So I don't think that she is doing things on purpose to curry favor. I think that's just where it's coming from. It's like, I did feel like this. This is how I felt.
Yeah, but there's a difference between I felt like Todd crossing boundaries with this person from work or whatever. There's a difference between saying that and saying he was having an affair.
I don't think to her there's a difference.
She recognizes it now, though.
Yes, when she calms down.
But she's not telling me the difference.
I think when she's alone with her thoughts, like by herself, and she's calm and she's not in a place of hurt, then there is a difference. When she's hurt and she's in that place where, you know, where she feels the same way as she felt when she discovered the woman, then, you know, the emotional fear of it all comes back up because she is sitting in this spot where she feels bad. And so she goes back to the place where she felt bad.
Yeah, but she's not, to me, truly taking accountability for the discrepancy there.
No, I don't think that.
Which is frustrating.
Yeah, I don't think she would.
Well, that's, I mean, like,
I don't think she would. But that doesn't make her a liar. Like, she still has not lied. She has described something that happened.
She's described something that she felt happened.
No, she described something that happened that her. Okay, so what is an emotional affair? You're having conversations with somebody that you shouldn't.
An emotional affair to me is like sexting, crossing lines, getting into
sexting
something.
Sexting is past an emotional affair.
Okay, so true. Check that out. That's true. But an emotional affair to me involves an affair happening. It doesn't mean that you have to be fucking or having anything physical, but like.
Your definition of an affair could be different from my definition.
Sure.
And her definition is different from Todd's.
Yeah, but her definition is different from her definition now.
No, I think her definition is her definition is different from Todd's. And I think that her definition is still her definition, but her definition when she is talking to Todd about it is like calming her down. I was like, actually, this is not, it's not an emotional affair. I think she gets to that. I think she got to that place when she's talking to him. But I think like left to her own devices where she's hurt and she's sad, it's still an emotional affair to her. It feels a little like Simone and Cecil to me, where like Simone is upset about Cecil having this friendship. But like on Cecil's end, like there's no problem here. I'm not actually having an affair with this woman. There's no problem here. I'm not, you know, she's just my friend. But Simone is like, get that woman out of our relationship.
But Simone never accused Cecil of having an emotional affair. Simone accused Cecil of choosing a family friend over her and crossing lines and boundaries in the relationship, which is why that's a good comparison. But it also establishes it's not an emotional affair.
Yeah, if she had a different definition of an emotional affair, maybe she would have called it that. I'm saying like for Bronwyn, her calling it an emotional affair is because that is her definition of it.
But it's not when she comes to the reunion and says, P.S., my definition doesn't exist.
It's not when she's around these people.
I don't think she was. She could have been correcting it absolutely for the group. But I also feel like she says things that are inflammatory in the moment and then she backtracks. And we're not sitting in the gray. OK, this is the stupidest.
Another example.
This is the stupidest example. I understand this is the stupidest example, but I have been focused on this throughout the season because it's the peculiar moments of Housewives that like tickle me. OK, she said she purchased jewelry from the jeweler and would go back home to get it to bring it with her the next time because she was calling Lisa a liar. Then she said she canceled the order. Then she goes on Watch What Happens and said she never bought it. She is literally lying about the jewelry. And I understand that people are like, well, you know, she's just kind of shifting. And it's because the jeweler was talking about her. She didn't know that until she was sitting down at the reunion.
Example.
It is a no, but it's a literal lie. I dropped my microphone.
It is a stupid example.
No, it's not. It's a real example. I'm taking that back. I'm fucking owning it. It's actually not a stupid example.
I am passionate about this necklace.
No, shut the fuck up. Her excuse and lying is stupid. Me raising, because she makes these things where it's like, what the fuck are you doing? Like, it's so stupid because do you know how many people on Housewives have done the thing of having the jeweler with the bajillion dollar pieces to show off that they have access to that? She's not the first person to do it. Fuck, I would do it if I was her. I want to wear a $4 million necklace. Like, no problem. The issue is people misunderstood that she actually purchased it because the edit didn't help her. It looked like he bought this for her as an anniversary gift. She could have reset that really easily. We still know she has more money than fucking God. No one's saying she's poor or whatever's going on with Lisa and John. Like, we know that the money is real, or I believe, we actually don't know that. I believe very strongly that their money is very real. She could have just said, I was just trying it for fun. And whatever he bought her for their anniversary or whatever the fuck, I'm sure he bought her something incredible. Her continuing this, I don't know if it's because she felt like she had to continue this vibe or else
she might look surprised, but was like, in the moment, how do I explain the sequence of events? I think the situation was too complicated for her in that moment where she's being surprised by Lisa to like actually say what happened.
But she lied.
Yeah, I feel like that was easier for her in that moment.
But then she continues lying.
When does she continue lying? Wasn't
on
it just,
Watch What Happens?
Oh, I thought she told the truth on Watch What Happens.
She said that she canceled the order, I think, and I apologize. She said that she never bought it because of the jeweler, which she didn't know about until the reunion. None of it makes sense.
No, I thought that what happened was she, like, the big necklace, yes, and then no, this is too big. Let's get something smaller made. And then she canceled the smaller order.
Because she's very concerned about making sure that everyday Americans know that she respects money while she's sitting there in a Met Gala, Carly Kloss.
There's
it's okay that we know you have a lot of money.
A $4 million necklace and a dress.
That was like $100,000. I don't even know how much it was. Tens of thousands of dollars.
There's a big difference. Like, what?
Carly Kloss adds a couple extra digits, I guess, from, you know, all those dinners with the Kushners. Yeah. I don't know. Continue. What?
No, I was just saying, like, I feel like what she said on Watch What Happens Live felt true to me. So,
but it was contradictory of what she said before, and everyone's pretending that it's normal.
Yeah, from what she said on the reunion,
which she changed during the reunion.
Yeah, because I feel like on the reunion, like, you were surprised by this information. I was like, well, I don't know how to explain everything that she said on Watch What Happens Live in that moment.
She is incredibly inconsistent.
I don't think, well, yes, that is inconsistent, but it didn't feel like some big character defining moment to be in this situation. I was like, why are we having this guy? Like, why is my jeweler talking to you, kind of thing?
Well, it's not her jeweler because she never paid anything.
Well, it could have been her jeweler.
The thing that's so funny to me is that the cast got into like a privacy statement of this part. How dare they say what seems to be real? She said she was going to buy things and never paid for them. And this person was upset. And because Lisa had introduced them, there's no like confidentiality agreement that she signed. And frankly, had there been a confidentiality agreement, it would have been null and void because she never paid for anything. So you don't get an exchange of privacy when this person sounds like they were chasing her to make payment and she didn't pay.
Well, I didn't read all of that into this lady is chasing her for payment.
This is the book that I've been reading.
That is not called what I took from that conversation. That is not what I took away from that conversation. I took away that this was a shady sales lady. It's not like she's the jeweler.
No, so, she's like a overworked assistant.
Yeah, the shady sales lady is annoyed that she didn't get her commission on something. And so she is, you know, blowing up her spot to Lisa for no reason. Mm. Because I feel like she would have gotten commission on this big necklace, but she was like, I don't want that necklace. I'm going to get something smaller made. And she doesn't get a commission on the smaller piece because she didn't sell her that.
But she never bought anything smaller. She lied about that.
Yeah, I don't think that. Oh, I thought she was going to buy the smaller one until it got messy. No?
She didn't know it got. No, she's saying that she bought this other thing, but I don't think there was ever an exchange of money.
Oh, okay. See, I thought that she bought the smaller
one. That's why it doesn't make sense.
I thought she bought the smaller one. It was like, I'll never buy from there again.
She said she did until she said she didn't.
When she said she didn't buy the smaller one?
Correct. Oh, okay. On Watch What Happens.
Oh, I don't.
Unless I'm wrong, which I absolutely could be.
Yeah, I didn't. I thought
no,
that
but
she
I'm right.
bought the smaller one.
She said she did, and then she said she didn't.
In the same sentence?
At a different point. I'm telling you.
And Watch What Happens Live?
This is the dumbest stuff. It's like, you lose me
well,
over
I
these
watch,
stupid
like,
lies.
I don't typically watch What Happens Live.
I know,
Live,
I'm
but
really
now,
bad at it.
Now I
want to
watch the little clip. I was like, because that would be wild. That like Andy, you're sitting across from her. You don't remember 5 seconds ago where she said she bought it?
Do you understand how deeply it pains me to agree with Heather about this? I don't want to.
Yes,
my
you
body.
Do.
No, I don't. Shut the fuck up.
Do.
No, I don't.
You should
my
see
body
the glee
is
in her face, y'all.
No,
she is
it's
so
pain.
Excited.
I'm smiling, but out of discomfort.
She is so excited.
No, I don't want to do it. I enjoy criticizing Heather. It brings me life.
So let's do that again.
There's not even, she's like a nothing burger. She lost her voice. God bless. Like, what is she doing there?
She lost
What's
her
she doing
voice,
there?
God bless.
She's supporting Lisa by telling her to shut the fuck up. Not bad advice, to be honest.
She didn't really do anything all season, really.
I mean,
did she? Other than like talk to Bronwyn?
I mean, the finale. She executive proofed the fuck out of that. And
wait,
I.
What was the finale? Let me think.
Let's all share text messages.
Oh yes,
that the executive producer told me to do.
Yes, that part. I was like, oh okay, this was
the monologue. Weird.
Like this was a great idea from somebody.
I think Heather.
What a wild suggestion to the cast.
Phenomenal. Never change.
Wow.
I think Heather is best served when she's not in the middle of drama because I like her more when she's not. Spoiler alert.
I don't think I would like her either way.
That's fine. That's fine.
But you know, the thing is, I don't like any of them. So that's it. It's one of the franchises where I don't like any person that's on it.
You know what's so interesting? I love all of them. I don't care when they fuck up.
No, I do not like a single person on this cast. I enjoy watching the show because I think it is interesting to watch people behave in weird like have weird reactions to things. It was like, that is not how a normal person would do this. That is not, I like that part of watching the show. It's like, normal people don't behave this way. Like, normal people would not react this way. And they are so wildly abnormal, all of them, in the way they react to stuff. So I think it's fascinating to watch. But no, I really dislike all of them. Like, extreme dislike for each and one of, like, each and every one of them.
I love them so much. I love and share even Whitney, which is weird.
You know, like, Whitney is the one that I like the most.
I'm leaving. This has been such a good episode. It's like, half of a one-parter.
That's the one that I, like, hate the least is Whitney. Yeah.
Investing can sometimes feel overwhelming with all the fancy jargon that makes it seem more complicated than it really is. Maybe all those finance bros just want another thing they can try and mansplain. Well, Acorns believes that anyone can be an investor. That's why they make it so easy to stick to basic, time-tested principles that give your money a chance to grow. Today's episode is sponsored by Acorns. Acorns is a financial wellness app that makes it easy to start saving and investing for your future. You don't need to be an expert. Acorns will recommend a diversified portfolio that matches you and your money goals. You don't need to be rich. Acorns lets you get started with the spare money you've got right now, even if all you've got is spare change. Investing, for me, felt like something I couldn't start without a substantial amount of money on hand. That's why Acorns is so important. Acorns makes it easy for everyone to start investing today. Sign up now and join the over 13 million all-time customers who have already saved and invested over $22 billion with Acorns. Head to acorns.com/andyscrolls or download the Acorns app to get started. Paid non-client endorsement. Compensation provides incentive to positively promote Acorns. Tier 1 compensation provided. Investing involves risk. Acorns Advisors LLC, an SEC registered investment advisor. View important disclosures at acorns.com/andyscrolls. After the holiday hustle, which I spiritually celebrated at Bluestone Manor, there's nothing like giving your home a little TLC. For me, my decor style is very different throughout my apartment. My living room is really kind of chill, and the clawfis is bright and colorful and fun. And thanks to Wayfair, I was able to find incredible pieces that worked with each individual space in my home. My lighting fixture, which is beautiful, gold, modern, and my air conditioner, necessary when I'm recording an episode where I mention Chris Manzo, is from Wayfair as well. Both of those serve a purpose, but they also look great. I was surprised when I went on Wayfair to see so many necessities, as well as beautiful pieces, lighting, closet organization, spring accents, and more. There's something for every style in every home, no matter your space or budget. Wayfair makes it easy to tackle your New Year's home goals with endless inspiration. They have free and easy delivery, even on the big stuff. Give your home the refresh it needs with Wayfair. Head to wayfair.com right now. That's WAYFAIR.com. Wayfair. Every style, every home.
But the rest of them, like, no, you're all really bad people.
My favorite, talk about contradictions. My favorite thing about Whitney is being like, you know what? I know that the worst thing that I had done, you know, prior to the season or whatever in life was talking about Lisa and John's marriage. So my way to change my behavior
is to
continue to talk about Lisa and John's marriage. But
because I want to burn it.
Because I want to burn this.
I'm trying to burn it.
No, it's literally... It's what Lanford Wilson Bobble like head. Wish for. No, it's the difficulty for me is that she's trying to say I was doing good work because I knew the rumor wasn't true. So I said it on camera, this rumor about your sex life and your marriage. I knew it wasn't true. So that was me correcting my behavior.
Yeah,
you're
correcting
welcome.
This rumor that no one else had heard. Yeah, it was like, let me tell everyone what the rumor was so I can burn it. I was like, I didn't hear about that. Like, you gave me new information.
And what is she trying to protect? No one's buying her jewelry. No one ever did, nor will they ever. No one ever would.
No. Nope. But that's fine. I mean, she's just living her little life and
it's a little life.
She's just living her little life.
Little life.
So good for her.
But I actually like her and Justin.
Yeah, I think they're very, very well cute.
Matched. And they're very well matched. Cute.
I was like, oh, okay. Because like he doesn't feel so much older than her.
He doesn't.
I think it's because he has that round chipmunk face with dimples. And I was like, okay, you'll always be like kind of young.
They're very cute together. Honestly, I have no problems genuinely with any of the husbands except for Seth Marks, who makes me viscerally uncomfortable. Like when he's trying to be funny, I'm like, I don't want to be here for this at all.
Yeah, I actually like the husbands more than the wives. Yeah, I do. On that show, I was like, because they're way more normal. Like they're more like normal people.
They are closer to normal.
Yes, they're
minus
closer to normal
Seth
people.
When he opens his mouth.
And even that is like, oh, I know that guy.
Yeah, I know that guy. I'm deep.
But I do not know a Meredith. Like I know a Seth. I have never met a Meredith before.
Okay.
And I used to work at, you know, Bed Bath & Beyond on the Upper East Side. I should have met a Meredith before. I have not met a Meredith. Let's see, an Angie. I have met some Angies. Mm. You know, I don't hate Angie, so let me walk that back. I don't hate Angie. She just makes me cringe, like trying to make her little moments. And I was like, oh, girl. Like, it's so embarrassing to me that she wants so badly to, you know, be the star of the show. And I was like, oh, it's so cringy. All of her little, like, throwing the napkins and bringing the scrolls. It was like, it's just so cringy.
I think it's adorable.
Well, I'm glad you do.
I think she's adorable. Like, her fighting about being a backup dancer, which she quite literally was.
Was a backup dancer.
Because now she's like, I'm center stage. I was never anything but. And it's like, sweetie, the reason you're center stage was because we kind of anointed you that, like, being, like, you know, sarcastic kind of. And then it happened. Like, yeah. Dream big. But you can't. You were quite literally the backup dancer in that dumb video.
I'm very proud of her to go from bench warmer to first chair. Like, okay.
That's a big deal.
Good job. But yeah, it's cringy for me to watch her. But I do like how good of a friend she is to Mary. Mm. And so I'm like, okay, she is the one that, like, she just makes me cringe. But I actually don't dislike her. So I'll walk that back. I don't dislike her. I don't.
Angie and Mary, first off.
What a beautiful friendship.
What a beautiful friendship. Yeah. Not to, like, you know, pivot the attention to Andy, but Andy crying, I was like, oh God, this is gonna be a thing. And then I was emo, and then Mary being emo, the cast being emo,
Whitney sobbing,
knowing that there are four people on the couch that we know of, mm-hmm. who have been directly impacted by having family members, loved ones who have struggled with addiction. Four people in that cast that we know of, that's a big fucking number.
I think Mary is like the best housewife of the year.
Most improved by far.
No, just like,
but that, straight ahead, like,
that's one of like
MVP.
The best seasons of anyone, really. Just from like all of it, it's like, one, you were really funny. Two, all of your arguments with people made sense. Like, and even the one with Angie where like it could have gone on forever and ever and not making sense, like I understand now why you had that reaction to her, like betraying you with Brittany, and I appreciate that you were able to receive the, like, so even that part where like it could have been dumb, it was like, nope, even that was still good. So like every argument was correct. Every like adventure they went on, she was like down to play. Every confessional was good. And then she had like this mega storyline that I don't think you could have handled any better as a mother. It was like, and her son like deciding to put that on air. It's just like, that is an iconic season from Mary Cosby. Good job, Mary.
It was incredible. I totally agree. I also felt like there was something interesting going on in that moment with Robert Jr. and in how she characterized it, where it really felt like they were in control. They were in control of how they wanted to share their story, what they wanted to share, her reaction to it, the decisions made after the fact. There was something so meaningful about it, and also meaningful in the way that it felt like production really stepped back. Like the edit, everything about it, it just felt like there was a lot of space around it in a really incredible, important way. And then the Angie of it all as a support system and someone whose mom struggled with addiction, just all the parts of it. Then the reveal during the reunion of Angie saying, you know, I carried this weight and this trauma with me. And then Mary said to me, as a mother, as the kind of mother that maybe Angie wishes she had the emotional depth and intelligence that Mary has displayed multiple times in talking about this. This was multiple times. And the way that Mary said to Angie, you know what? I think if your mom was here now, she would have made different choices. Mm-hmm. Fucked me the fuck up. Are you fucking kidding me? I was like on the goddamn floor. Important, powerful, Mary Cosby, Angie, last name I forgot.
Katzenavis.
Right. Angie, Greek stuff. I really appreciated it.
It was very...
How dare I forget the K of Angie K. Angie Harrington is like screaming somewhere and I love that for her. What a waste of an Angie. Like, this was just very powerful. Everybody's crying except for Meredith, who's...
Maybe can't.
6 miles back.
Right.
Like,
I'm not sure she can.
Well, I think she was feeling things in advance with the iPhone note stuff of like stuff she had prepared, but I was like, and I know that because we know what her family has dealt with. I was just like, how are you? Why am I not feeling that you're feeling anything here? She felt very cold
that
and
could
distant.
Just be, you know, just her.
It felt almost intentional.
We know she did feel, and you know, the text message that she sent Mary was very genuine and like, you know, offering additional support and stuff. So I think she felt, but she just may not show that in the same way.
That's a
way.
Good point. Like, it just, I don't think the edit.
Because I don't think
look,
she's a crier. Like, I don't.
Well, I think she probably, well, we know she did that night in that hotel, but I don't think she, I don't think she cries maybe out of hurt as much as she does out of anger, which
is. Oh, that's probably true. Like, yeah.
Like a little,
I can see that.
A little bit of a candy cry. A
little rage cry. Yeah.
Yeah. Which I also do. I do. I cry out of anger. I, you know, like when the words can't come and I'm so frustrated and I've internalized and I'm like crying. That's a great point about her like showing support in other ways. The edit just really didn't help her because it was like meaningful emo, shift to Meredith, out to lunch, right. Meaningful emo, Meredith harboring some kind of emotion. That's not exactly what I thought I was going to see at this point. So we don't know. That's the whole thing about the internal life of these women. It's like we pick up clues and interpret them or misinterpret them according to our own journeys in life.
I think we can give everybody some little grace on that one.
That's a great point. Because, I'm glad you said that.
Because it was just like such an important moment.
Yeah.
And I think even Mary was prepared to give everybody grace in how they, you know, like when Andy was like, quote unquote, trying not to be messy by saying like, oh, Angie was a better friend than Meredith. Mm-hmm. You and Meredith were close. Mary could have taken that to a messy place and she didn't. She gave Meredith the grace to be the kind of friend that Meredith is and that Meredith is busy. And she did show up for me in different ways. And she was a really good friend to me, but Angie's friendship is different. I think that was also very emotionally intelligent because she didn't downplay her relationship with Angie, but she also didn't downplay how good of a friend Meredith was and just acknowledged that they were different kinds of friendships. So... good job, Mary.
The thing that's so interesting to me is that the way that you've discussed, like the way that these women have had grace for each other, which I think is an incredible thing, but also saying like, I don't like these women.
Oh, no, I don't like. I don't have that grace. I'm not on the show.
No, I'm not saying that you owe anyone grace. It's just so interesting that you're like, yeah, this person, like the emotional depth and whatever, but like, I don't like these people. I'm like, well, what? But you do.
She's I feel a
like
cult leader. I will never like her.
Right, right, right.
I think that I enjoy watching her on the show. I actually like had put something online about I have principles in every area of my life except Bravo, because I was very much like, I never want to see that cult leader on my screen again. Mm-hmm. And then this seems like, more Mary, please. I want more Mary. But like, no, she's a cult leader. Like, you're not. And I like how she quickly glossed over the church renovation because she does not want to be dragged down that road again of people calling her a cult leader. So when Andy brings up, it's like, oh, how's the church going? It's like, it's good. We had a couple of services, moving on. Like, it was like, we are not going to stay and talk about the, oh, you missed that part of the church
renovation. No, I didn't. And I'm just wondering, like, does the church still exist?
I mean, they show pictures.
Well.
But he did ask her directly if she was still preaching, and she did not answer that she was preaching. She just said that the renovations were good and they had had two services, but she didn't say she was still preaching. So maybe she's no longer leading the cult.
Which would be great, right? Yeah. That would be forward
that
movement.
That would be wonderful. Maybe she, you know, maybe she had too much stuff to do. She has had a lot going on in her life. Maybe she needed to step back. But either way, I bet that money is still going to her.
But what money at a certain point? If you're going after a group of people,
they keep giving you money. I grew up in the black church, and they will keep giving you money until they can't pay their gas bill.
But I'm saying, if you get to that point,
I don't think they've gotten to that point. I don't think she's ruined every black person in Salt Lake City. There are always more.
The way, though, that like Lisa's friend on a prior season, the way that it was kind of described made me feel like there's going to be an end date here, because there's a specific congregation that feels like they're sort of trapped in this cycle. Mm-hmm. Once they are fully exhausted, noting Mary's like quality of life and mm-hmm. the cost of being Mary is quite high. There, I feel like that's not sustainable.
Well, I've never seen it happen. Like, I've never seen it happen where the congregation gets to the point where they can recognize that the pastor has too much money.
Well, I think that they were like signing over mortgages and stuff. I'm like, how many houses need to be signed over? How many houses will be? I'm quite literally saying, like, if you're signing over this stuff
but
because you've been
really
indoctrinated,
that's
true.
Happened.
Well, people have said that it did.
I've never seen that happen. And I grew up in a cult. Like, I grew up in a religious cult. And I was basically in, like, two, because I was in a real cult called the Worldwide Church of God. But then I was in, like, the fake cult, you know, Southern Baptist Church. So I grew up in two, because my grandma was part of Southern Baptist Church. And then my mom and dad were part of the Worldwide Church of God. So I went to church on Saturdays with the really culty church. And then I went on Sundays with my grandma. And so I saw, you know, people like paying their tithes and stuff all the time to the preacher who's driving around in a Mercedes and has a second home at Myrtle Beach and like all this kind of stuff. Never saw anybody like signing over mortgages. It's more just like, I am going to give. And the doctrine from the pastor is like, if it doesn't hurt, you haven't given enough.
Oof.
It's like, you know, this is like, this is you showing God how much you love him, that you are willing to struggle and give him money. And so like, you have to give enough to where it does hurt a bit. And so you do give enough to where you have to like scrimp and save to pay things that you really need. Or like maybe you cut your high blood pressure medicine in half. I saw that a lot. Like they would do like half of blood pressure pills so they would only have to get the prescription every other month so that they could use the extra to pay their tithes. So I saw stuff like that, but I never saw anybody mortgage a house.
Maybe she's just inventive.
So maybe just a couple people mortgage their
house.
Yeah,
that's possible. I would hope for that.
Retelling the story to Lisa is like, everybody's mortgaging their house.
Yeah, that's
okay.
That's
what it feels like more to me.
That's good clarity. I'm so sorry that happened.
Oh, I didn't mortgage anything.
I know, but to be in that environment.
Oh, to grow up in a cult.
I mean, we can agree.
Yeah,
that's
it's hilarious at this point. Like looking
back, not what I was going to say.
Wow, I survived two cults.
That's a great way of processing
it.
Yeah,
I saw on like Overheard New York. Do you follow that on Instagram?
I follow people who repost it.
Yeah, so it was one of them. And they were talking about like red flags on dates. And this guy was like, oh, yeah, I went on a date with this girl and she said she had escaped from a cult, red flag. And I was like, well, I escaped from two and I'm a green flag. So I feel like one may be red flag because maybe you have not unlearned all your stuff. But if you escape from two, that is mental fortitude.
So the takeaway here is cults are bad.
Cults are bad. Don't join them.
And with Mary, maybe only a couple people
have mortgaged
signed over their houses mm-hmm. and their like insurance policies.
So
and
she
stuff.
Could get her lymph nodes removed in New York while she's, you know, getting a nose job. But I digress. Her hair looks so good this season, though. Love her hair this season. She stopped. I think she switched from wigs to clip-ins because like her, you know, you can see like the bust down middle part is like her natural leave out. And I'm like, somebody is really doing her up well. She got a little carousel thermique. Hair looks great.
I am unwell.
You don't think her hair looked great?
No, she looks great.
No.
Shut the fuck up. It's the cost of some of this. Like
hair is expensive, as you can see.
Your hair is gorgeous. It's not the cost of the hair. It's like, who is paying the price for this?
Which is
spiritually,
why we'll
morally, literally.
Fan. We'll never be a Mary fan. And then when she was having that conversation with Robert Jr. and like, oh, heartbreaking conversation, especially from his part. But like, what part of that conversation, do they leave space for the fact that, like, one of the reasons Robert Jr. is probably doing drugs is because his father is his grandfather?
Well, we don't know. We don't know why.
No, I'm just saying, like, when are you, like, that, y'all need to go to therapy to deal with, like, you all as a family need to go. It's not just Robert needs to go by himself for his addiction. Like, that has to play a part in how we get to this space.
There's
that
a
is so big. We never talk about it anymore, but that is the biggest thing in her life.
Yeah, and it was used as a punchline by
everybody
who will not be named.
Everyone.
I think we don't know why and how and when Robert's journey began with substances and with substance abuse. Certainly, a person can make the argument that from a family healing perspective and a family, let's not internalize traumas and let's not deny the reality of how your marriage began, that I have no idea what impact that has had
and
on Robert's life.
Like,
but I also
having it on television where it is a punching bag, because we do know that, you know, his substance abuse started within the last 5 years. He wasn't doing it as like a 12
year
old.
Right. But also he's 21.
Oh, he's
starting
21.
At 16 is a time in which a lot of people start experimenting.
And so it's like,
and it's like part of the, you know, there's just a lot that happens, I think, in the development of a young person's life at that point.
Who is on television.
Who's on television and also dealing with like family stuff that's probably not getting discussed, in a very sort of strained, confusing relationship between his dad and his mom. I have no idea.
Because even when she hinted about it, you know, it's like, oh, I felt so bad for her when she's talking about like, oh, my mother didn't care about me and didn't, you know, like me and all this stuff. And I was like, yeah, because she had planned to marry him.
So fucked
and
up.
You did instead. Like, you stole her church and her stepfather / husband. Like she was supposed to be the first lady of the church. That's one of the ways we got here. And so it's like Mary obviously has probably been groomed from a very young age, so she has all of this trauma to unpack as well. And it's like, I don't know if her, you know, her God will allow her to go to therapy and address it. Because, you know, that's one of the things, like, especially in Black churches, like, oh, you don't go to therapy, you go to Jesus. And I was like, her just praying to Jesus over the fact that, like, I grew up in this, like, very screwed up familial situation where I was, you know, ultimately not only marrying the man that my mother wanted to marry, but marrying the man that my mother wanted to marry who was her stepfather. It's like two levels.
Yeah. And I think the idea of like, quote unquote, stealing this man is Mary's mom's perspective versus exactly what you said.
Where it was grooming.
Where she was literally, she was a victim of this. Like,
so
it's all really terrible and sad, which is why it's so incredible to see some light here and some like connection. And
well, you know,
I
think she probably is a good pastor though. Like, for as much as I'm like, oh, you know, you're a cult leader and they're giving you all their money and blah, 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 blah. I feel like the way they approached having this conversation on Bravo really came from a place of like that pastor spirit where I'm going to minister to the public. Like, I'm going to share our story to help other people. It's very much like a part of, you know, that type of church. It's like, yes, I'm going to minister to the people and I have a big platform to minister to millions of people. So instead of standing on a street corner to minister to the people walking by, we can minister to the public by using your story to, you know, help other people. And I think showing it in that way was probably part of her being a pastor. Like, it felt very like preacher to me, not in a bad way. It felt very like, oh no, this is what you do as the leader of a church. It's like, if you believe that you're supposed to help others and you're supposed to show others the light and show them the way, what better way than to minister to your own son and support him through this like very dark time and to show it to other people, like, yes, this is how you're supposed to do it. This is how you show support without judgment. This is how you allow your kids to like open up to you and show it in that way. So it felt very like from a church space to me. But good job.
That's interesting.
You want to go to church?
I have been to church before.
You've been to a black church?
I have not been to a black church before, but I would be happy to attend anytime.
I used to go to church pretty often. I used to go once a month because I lived next door to an old lady in Harlem and her kids didn't want to take her to church in Brooklyn. So I would go to church with her like once a month.
Aww.
Like, I've been an atheist since I was like 12, but but I would go to church with her and it was like, she didn't need to know I was an atheist. That, you know, that would just make her feel bad for no reason. I was like, she likes to go to church and she is in her 90s. So let's take her to church. She's really happy there. I love gospel music. I actually had a conversation with one of the assistant pastors about me being an atheist.
Oh, that's great.
because he asked me, it was something like, how come I only come like with her or something? I was like, oh yeah, because I don't do all this. And so then we talked about it and like, you know, spirituality and like treating people well. And I was like, listen, I'm not a Christian, but I believe you are supposed to love thy neighbor. Like, mm-hmm. that is how I base most of my decisions in life. And that's my neighbor. And she needed something and I can provide it for her. Mm-hmm. And it does not hurt me to provide it for her. So I'm going to do that because it does not hurt me to go to church. I actually had a good time. Mm-hmm. The music is good. Maybe I don't agree with everything being said, but that doesn't hurt me. I was like, all right, whatever. Do what you want. So you can come. We can go to church.
I would be happy to. You can come with me to temple where we'll both learn prayers for the first time.
You don't know any of your Jewish prayers?
I always fuck them up. And then I went to Shabbat like once recently. Well, I went to Shabbat the Friday after 10/7 when it was like the global day of jihad. Mm-hmm. I was like, today's a good day to go to Shabbat. And sure. Because they were saying like, this is like it felt like a political choice of mm-hmm. like,
I'm going to be very Jewish.
I'm going to be extraordinarily Jewish today. I also remember falling out of the cab, going into the temple, and there was so much security there. Mm-hmm. And it was like a security guy or whatever was like, okay, what's happening? Because I was like sort of toddling in Manolo's like, but I remember like,
because that was your sign not to go back.
No,
it's like you don't actually belong here.
No, it was a sign to like wear shoes I can walk in. So then I go in, but the problem was, and it was a wonderful Reform temple. I grew up in a Reform temple, but everybody knew like when to turn and when not to. And I was like, can we like make an announcement here? Right.
like this was choreographed.
Shift to the left, go to the right. But
are we doing the cha-cha slide?
What is happening? But no, I'll know. I can like, you know, say some shit from heart. I can do the Mourner's Kaddish, Via Kadash, Shemay Rabbah, yada yada.
That sounds just like speaking in tongues in a black church.
We have there's a lot of similarities. There's a lot of similarities. But like those are the kinds of conversations like with my rabbis growing up in a very progressive temple. Like there were no arguments about abortion, rabbis pro-choice, mm-hmm. community pro-choice.
Oh, that seems like a nice place to grow
being
up.
Being pro-choice, a tenet of the Jewish religion.
You could not ask questions about anything.
No, it was very much like a woman has the right to her body and mm-hmm. There is importance in a woman's life that's sometimes overlooked. So when it came to like politics stuff, I was certainly raised in an environment where like my home conversations were in line with the temples. But when we got into interfaith stuff, I went here, rabbis went there, where it was like my dad wrote a book about my brother diving into a swimming pool, becoming a quadriplegic. And the first 10 days after the accident, unbeknownst to me, my parents were deciding whether or not to remove life support. Mm-hmm. And that became my dad, a litigator, undertook this as a litigator would, and was like grilling the ethics community, everyone else, when they're trying to figure out, does my 17-year-old now quadriplegic son life have value? Right. Is he going to have a quality of life? And so having that conversation, like he then had those conversations with my childhood head rabbi, love of my life, shout out Rabbi Gutterman in Providence, Rhode Island, since retired, shout out Temple Beth El, who like he would challenge the rabbi mm-hmm. And have those kinds of, that was open. You were open to have conversations. Like part of being Jewish was like challenging the idea, the tenets of being Jewish. What does this ultimately mean? So all of that I found really powerful while having no idea nor really interest nor whatever in like the idea of there being a God. That was like so beyond. I was like, I don't give a fuck about that. I don't believe it, but I also don't care. But that wasn't that wasn't, to me, important to the experience of being Jewish.
Well, yeah, that's, I think, because, you know, from an outsider looking in, being Jewish isn't just a religion.
Right.
Like, it's, you know, a lot of it is cultural.
Sure.
I also don't think that a lot of people leave space for that same kind of culture for Christians. Maybe not all kinds of Christians, but like to me, I'm an atheist, right? And I've been an atheist for, you know, over 20 years now, but I still listen to gospel music. Mm. I still enjoy the Black church. There are a lot of sayings that I use because they come from the Black church and like that all Black people know. Like, you know, if you go into a group of Black people and say like, you know, God is good all the time. Like this is a Black kind of culture, because for me, when I look about the things that hold like the Black community together, it's like we came from so many different like places in Africa and we were like forced to build a life together here. And like the one thing that really tied us together was this belief in the white man's God, right? And so the church was like the center of the community. It's the place where, you know, the women went to fellowship. It's where you got your support. It's where you went for fun, really. Like on a Wednesday night, you go to choir practice or you go to Bible study. Like these things were fun. So when you leave the church, you may leave the religion, but you still carry the culture with you. And I don't think there are a lot of conversations about like the culture of the Black church specifically in terms of the things that it provides outside of the religion. Because there are so many things I still identify with inside the Black church that have nothing to do with the Bible and nothing to do with, you know, Jesus and tithes and all that kind of stuff. So even though I'm no longer a believer, I still feel like a Black church person. And when I'm around Black church people, like I have a Black brunch group and a lot of us grew up in the church and it feels like church. Mm. There's no religion, but it feels like, oh yes, we are here together. This is our community and our culture. Even though we come from different places in the country, we still have that same kind of through line of the Black church. So
there's still a connective thread, mm-hmm. even if, especially when your relationship to the church yep. and that kind
it's,
of
and then you have a different kind of relationship changes. To each other because mm-hmm. it's like you're outsiders of this culture that you grew up in and that you like really intimately understand, but that you are kind of not welcome in anymore. Because I don't know if it's like the same with Jewish people. It's like, well, I'm not a believer, but I'm still Jewish. Like, do you, they don't push you out the same way or do
totally.
They?
Totally. Okay. I think so much of, for me, of identifying with being Jewish has nothing to do with mm-hmm. the like Torah of it all. It really doesn't have anything to do with the religious specific to God perspective. It's the community. It's the identity. It's the environment. It's the fight. It's mm-hmm. the survival. It's the pain. It's the intergenerational
trauma.
All of that
stuff is the same from the Black church.
Yeah.
But I think the difference is it's like, if you are not a believer, they push you out in the way that you guys still get to be a community.
For me, it wasn't a pushing out at all. The only thing where there was tension was truly like conversations with a different rabbi about interfaith relationships, because there's so much trauma mm-hmm. from the experience of being Jewish because of hundreds of years of you know, it's like the Holocaust before the Holocaust to come. There's just so much fear that there will be none of us left, that the idea of potentially making a choice to get married to someone who is not, this is not everybody's experience.
Right.
This was just a religious leader explaining why it would be challenging for him to like officiate an interfaith mm-hmm. relationship. It was not... To me, the experience of being Jewish, and I'm also a Reformed Jew, which is like more on the more progressive liberal side, but all of our family friends were conservative, or the vast majority. It's like the idea of challenging the experience or the tenets of Judaism or the idea of God or whatever, like the challenge of it all was integral to being Jewish. It was versus maybe in other communities where challenging is a bad thing. Like look at the Church of Latter-day Saints. Mm. Challenging is not seemingly a great thing that Heather and Whitney can share experiences of whatever for versus whatever Lisa Barlow is doing. Like to be Jewish is to really sometimes like sit in discomfort and have maybe uncomfortable conversations. Like that's, which has maybe influenced the perspective that I see in the way that I have conversations maybe more than anything else.
That's a good point too. I mean, welcome to Andy's Theologians with
Shalom, everyone. According to the Talmud.
You didn't know you were getting that today.
The Ten Commandments, number one, watch Bravo all day, every day. Honor thy neighbor, unless you want to sex their husband, in which case, welcome to the franchise. We're so happy to have you.
What a detour.
What a detour, but also what an important one. And I'm so thankful for you, as you have on prior episodes, for being so vulnerable and like sharing that. Because for me, as a total outsider, it's just incredibly connective. Mm-hmm. And it's like one of those things of like,
people are more alike than they are different.
People are more alike than they are different. And it's so hard because on social media, IRL, there's such an incredible disconnect because of some person's perception, projection, inflammatory hatred that's become an artful performance, like the desire to like politically, violently remove any nuance. The diversity of experience is now seemingly outlawed. Yep. Like that is so odd to me. It's just, it's like, it's obviously infuriating, but it's just so odd because
it's the internet, the worst but invention it's not, ever.
It's the internet. It's also our country. Like it's more than the internet.
Which wouldn't have gotten there without the internet.
Very true. certainly not as quickly.
Right.
Make haste. There's just something that's lost so often because the idea of listening has become a crude joke. It's like people laugh at the idea of listening.
Like, oh my God, is you like, are you have empathy?
Yeah.
You are listening to somebody's opinion.
Right.
Like it's like if somebody starts telling you something, you're just waiting to shoot them down, waiting for your comeback, waiting. I'm just like, no, you can just like listen and then respond to what they said. But conversation has been lost.
That's why I really appreciate, we'll talk about Housewives a little bit maybe, but like, that's why I really appreciate your writing a lot, because I feel like your writing is clarifying in that way. Like, and there's so much your voice is incredibly clear. And I think, talk about essays. Like I
write some long form essays.
No, but they're really great. Like they're just, there's no other way for me to describe it. And it's a real lost art is to just really kind of sit in things and reflect and be focused on defense.
I don't like that so much of like writing, especially online writing, seems to be to win. And like, I never write anything from the point of view where I need to win. It's more just like most of my writing is working out my own feelings about something. And so when I'm working out my own feelings, a lot of other viewpoints will make its way into the writing because it's like, yes, I'm sitting here from this space, but also the person I am now is not the person I grew up as. Mm. You know, like I grew up in a conservative, like wealthy environment in the South. And so, you know, that's not the person that I turned out to be. And so, you know, you just get like I want to talk through the issues so that a lot of people can connect their own experiences to it, because I want people to have more dialogue and more conversation. So I'm like, yes, I'm going to put everything I think about this issue out there, even the things that are unpopular, because sometimes the unpopular thing needs to be said. Like sometimes the unpopular thing is not that unpopular. It's like you're just sitting in it by yourself because you are afraid to voice it or you're afraid to say it out loud. It's a lot of why I don't do a whole lot of political writing anymore, because a lot of what I would be writing from a space of like, what is the point? And I don't think that's great energy out there. But every once in a while, I'll write one about that feeling, because there are a lot of people who feel lost and they kind of feel like, what is the point? And I think that when other people are afraid to say, what is the point? It makes them feel even lonelier. And so I don't want that feeling to infect other people who are very passionate, but I do kind of want to like get the people who are feeling, you know, really down and depressed. I was like, you don't have to feel that way.
but also you're not the only one feeling
right.
that
way. Yeah, like you're not the only one, and here are the ways that I deal with it. And it's like, yes, I was on lots of medication for a long time. You know, February 22nd, I'm coming up on February 2022. I'm coming up on 3 years of not being medicated. It was the last time I took an anti-anxiety pill or depression pill. But before that, you know, I felt just like really despondent about the direction of the world and humanity and all of that. And so a lot of what I write is trying to reach out to other people who feel that way. Like I write from a place of, if I see on social media, a lot of people are spiraling. I'm like, let me see what I can do to stop the spiral, because you don't have to feel this way, because that's what's happening all the time. I was like, all right, let's despiral. What can I put out there that will help people breathe?
Yeah.
And so if I put the words on the paper, then a lot of times people will breathe after.
You know what I think about a lot, even though I've only watched it one time, but it really kind of landed for me. I don't know. It's stayed with me since that movie Babel. Have you seen Babel?
No, but that's
oh God, it's gonna
all the languages, right?
Yeah, it's gonna fuck you the fuck up. But if you're like not in a great place, don't watch that fucking movie. But it was honestly one of the most meaningful experiences that I've had watching something, and it has stayed with me ever since, because the through line of that movie was like, pain is universal. Mm-hmm. And it was just a lot of people processing trauma for like 2 hours. Oh, and Brad Pitt and Kate Blanchett on a fun little vacation. Like, there was just so much profound upset. And I think that's the thing that's kind of lost here, because people are at war over whose upset is realer or more important, right? Versus like, a lot of people are processing things. They're at different points. Mm-hmm. And there are experiences that I am going to have that are going to be different than experiences that you are going to have. And just to like sit in the fact that like, I am not going to understand the experience of being a gay Black man in America, but I can certainly take a second and understand my own privilege and take a second and like listen to someone else's experiences and allow, God forbid, that experience to exist. Like, mm-hmm. the claiming of other people's realities is so terribly unfortunate, which is why this podcast to me is she's steering it back. Okay. Just come with me on this merry little journey. The podcast is really interesting to me because often it's like claiming an opinion and it's sort of the battle and back and forth. But I might be saying, I have a hot take. I might believe it very strongly, but I don't know if
we don't know these people.
Well, it's not even just we don't know these people.
We would have different relationships to what we see on the screen based on who we are.
Sure, absolutely. And also, I'm not saying I'm right. I'm saying I have an opinion and I have reasons to potentially back it up. Mm-hmm. But a lot of people say things with reasons to back it up. That doesn't mean they're right. I'm just sharing my perspective and the ways I might connect with someone, and also say to someone multiple times, you can go fuck the fuck off. Like, that's kind of that to me is a little bit of a lost art. Like, to just kind of like have maybe meaningful conversations about a thing that people so often just kind of flit off of, like, oh, that's just kind of a nothing burger. There's nothing there for you. There's nothing profound or intelligent that can come from this, where people look at housewives as a little bit of a moral abyss. And I'm like, okay, well, you know.
Well, you can fuck off.
You can fuck off. Also, are some of these people maybe cult leaders? It's possible.
Like, yes. Probably
Tom Girardi being anointed like the king of men for several years. Meanwhile, he was financially disemboweling like just a lot of people who were already terribly vulnerable, who he was choosing to take advantage of because he knew he could. There's some stuff. There's Jennifer
but you
Shaw.
Know what? That's life.
Well, yeah, I would hope that Tom Girardi wouldn't be like Sunday to Friday, but like, yeah, but
these people exist in the world.
They do exist in the world. And there's something kind of powerful about just like the conversations we have and maybe moments where we're holding someone accountable, and a person might disagree with the reasons I'm holding them to account. But that's the merry journey that we're taking. This conversation is just getting started. So head on over to part 2, available now.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.